I moved around a lot growing up. Every 2 to 3 years, it seemed like I was in a new town and a new school and a new house. And some of those moves went really well. I made friends pretty quickly. Some of the other moves did not go as well, and I did not make friends as quickly. And there were some places where I just felt like I just didn't belong. Have you ever felt like you didn't belong? Middle school, 8th grade, new town, new city, new school, and I show up, and at my old school, people dressed a certain way, and in my new school, people did not dress that way. And at my old school, different TV shows were popular, and different music and bands were popular, and at my new school, those bands were not that popular. And so haircuts and all these things that seem like tiny little things, insignificant things, made me feel like I didn't belong. And people affirmed at times that I just didn't belong. And it was a hard 2 years. It was a learning 2 years. And then I moved to a new place and a new school. And there's this guy, and he was, at the time, the best guitarist I had ever known. And one of the best basketball players I had ever known. And so he kind of just ruled the school. Like he could get away with whatever he wanted. It was really popular. And for whatever reason, first day of school, he decides I'm going to be his friend. It was amazing. Like to feel like you belong and you're important and you're in and it, you don't have to impress anybody. Like you're just kind of in. Like I love that. A couple of years ago, was getting ready to move to Nashville and was telling people I was moving to Nashville and would hear things like, you're gonna fit in so well there, which sounds like a compliment if you say it right. But when you realize they're saying like, cause you don't hear, like, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure it'll go great for you in Nashville cause it's not working here, guy, you know. And so was excited about moving to Nashville, have loved the city, have spent time off in the city. And so was so excited to actually get to live here. It was, for some of you, if you're from here, it may sound crazy, but it was really a dream for Melissa and I to move to the city. We've loved the city for a long time. And got to the city and realized that the bands that I thought were cool and were cutting edge were, like, 3 years ago. And some of the clothes that I was wearing that I thought were just really hip and all were 3 years ago. And some of the things that I just, like, the places to go, the restaurants that I thought were cutting edge were 3 years ago. And so people would tell me about places and, like, hey, you know Pinewood Social? I was like, yeah, man, that first album was great, wasn't it? It's like, it's a restaurant, you know? And all these things. And so I was trying to figure out, like, what does it look like to be in Nashville, to be invested in Nashville, to be a Nashvillian, to make this place my home, to find a place here where I belong. It's a desire in a lot of us, isn't it? Like, we want to belong. We want to feel like people understand us and know us. It just feels so good to be known, doesn't it? I officiated a wedding this weekend, a few hours from here, and got to hear at the rehearsal dinner these stories of these two people who were getting married. And some of the stories were crazy, and some of the stories were just really personal and moving. But you could just tell, as a bride and groom were listening to these stories, they were just beaming. And there were nerves involved in this whole process, and a lot of details go into it. But as the stories were being told about them and about how important they were to these other people, you could just tell how good it felt to be known and to feel like you belong. As I've gotten to know the city, I've realized that there are some things that just don't make sense, that don't seem to belong together. Speaking of Pinewood Social, they serve food. And they have a bowling alley. And they have a pool and bocce ball and a coffee shop. And it's like, all of this, like something in here doesn't belong. And then I heard about ramen, which, let me tell you, I know about ramen. Like, I've known about ramen for a long time, 24 cents a pack. You know, you boil the water, boil the noodles, open the flavor pack, put it in. But when I moved here, I started hearing about ramen restaurants. I'm like, who can't make their own ramen? Like, you know what I mean? I ate a lot of I appreciate your honesty. I ate a lot of ramen in college, but I didn't need a college degree to make ramen. Like, it's super easy and cheap. And just pro tip, if you only use half the water, you get twice the flavor. I mean, that's free this morning. And so I started hearing about these ramen restaurants. There's a ramen restaurant. And then I went, and it's like, it's actually amazing. But it just felt like it didn't make sense, right? Like it just, this doesn't, there's a ramen restaurant. And there's also a Chef Boyardee restaurant opening in East Nashville. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't belong. A few years ago, I tried yoga for the first time. And last time, coincidentally. And it was an interesting experience. I could see how eventually people would like it. Eventually. One of my good friends invited me, and he had been going for years. And so for some reason, he thought it would be good for me to go to the advanced class, because he didn't want to go to the beginner class. And so 10 minutes into the session, he's literally standing on his head, and I'm just like, oh, what do I do? And then, you know, at the last 10 minutes, it was basically a nap. So it's like, well, I could do this, you know? But there was no point in that hour and 15 minutes of yoga where I was thinking, like, how could this be better and improve? Well, actually, there were a lot of times in that hour and 15 minutes where I was thinking, like, how this could be better. The nap was a good addition. It was a good thing. But there was no time in that hour and 15 minutes of yoga that I thought, what does this need? Like, what could make yoga better? And my mind went to goats. You know what I mean? Like, when I think about yoga, I think about, usually it seems like an intellectual way to work out. Like smart people do yoga. I just go to the gym and do a treadmill, but like intelligent people work out to yoga and are concerned about their minds and bodies and this holistic approach. And so when you think about yoga, how did goats happen? Like, goat yoga is a thing. And when I first heard of, yeah, look at this. Goat yoga is a thing. And so when I first heard about this, I was like, I mean, I'm from Mississippi. Like, if it were to start anywhere, like, that makes sense there. I don't get it. I've never done this. I've never shown up to goat yoga. But it's like a craze. Apparently, it's hard to get tickets to goat yoga right now, which is insane to me. Like, let's break into prayer circles now because our world is broken. Goat yoga is a thing. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. These two things do not belong together in my brain. And when I'm reading the New Testament, I'm reading these stories of Jesus and of the followers of Jesus, and so many of these stories don't make sense to me. Jesus starts out with the Sermon on the Mount. It's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, speech ever given. And he starts talking about how poor people are blessed. And I look around at the world and I think he's wrong. And he talks about, blessed are the people who mourn. And I'm like, Jesus, look around. It doesn't look like that to me. The times have you ever lost someone? Has your life ever just felt like you were in a ditch? It's like, man, I'm just blessed. That just doesn't seem right to me. It doesn't fit. That those two statements don't belong together. And then you see Jesus living this stuff out and the followers of Jesus living this stuff out. And in the first chapters of Acts, it's Jesus has departed and the followers are left to figure out this world and this movement. And they're given the Holy Spirit. And all of a sudden, they see that within their community, there are people that don't have what they need. And so the people that do have what they need start selling their stuff and giving it to the people that don't. That's not how this world works, right? Instead of trying to get ahead, instead of trying to build their own kingdoms, they're giving it away. And there's this guy who literally dies for his message, who's talking about loving his enemies. I don't know if y'all have enemies, but I grew up redheaded. Like, I had enemies, you know. And the first thing on my list to do with my enemies was not to love them. It was not a high priority for me to forgive my enemies, to love them better than I love myself. Like, I was plotting in my seventh grade mind, like, how am I going to destroy these people socially, you know, not physically, socially? How am I going to get even? I know people who have a career, who are successful in their career, simply to get even and prove wrong someone who made fun of them as a kid. And here's Jesus saying, you know the person who talked bad about you or who wronged you or stabbed you in the back? I want you to love them as I've loved you. As you love yourself, I want you to forgive the wrongs. Don't hold them against the person, but just let it go. It just doesn't seem like it belongs to me. And you read on, and I think it's chapter 6, there's this guy named Stephen. He's joined in this Jesus movement. And he's become a leader and a servant in this Jesus movement. And he's about to die for his faith. And it says that he's kind of got this picture of heaven and he's about to die for his faith and he starts preaching a sermon. Now guys, I preach sermons. Like that's what I do weekly. But if I'm dying, that's not on my list. He's looking at the end of his life and he's talking about the greatness of God. Just doesn't fit. And we read on in the history of the church and this Jesus movement and looking at even outside of the scriptures and at some of the history, we know that the first apostles, at least all but one of them, gave their lives for Jesus, gave their lives for their commitment to this person. And yet the movement kept growing. I don't know about y'all, but I'm not in line to give my life away, literally. I mean, I'll talk about figuratively, like, yeah, I'll give my life away. But when I'm looking at death, like, I'm not getting in that line. If there's more than one line, and there are more than one lines, I'm not getting in that one. And yet, when we read this Jesus movement, when we hear about the work of God and the work of the Spirit in the world, people keep giving their lives away, and other people keep coming to Jesus to get in that line. And those two things just don't belong to me. They just don't make sense to me. See, when I look at my life a couple of years into Nashville, like, I'm trying to fit here. I'm trying to belong here. I've bought clothes that are made in Nashville. I go to coffee shops where it's roasted locally. I mean, we even have coffee roasted in this building this morning. And I go to the restaurants where it's local. I try to listen to the bands that are local. I'm still not super local. I mean, I was in a restaurant and saw this guy's hair recently. I'm like, man, that guy's hair looks like Jack White, who's this basically a rock star. And then I kind of leaned over and I was like, it's because that's Jack White, and I'm fangirling all over the place. So I'm not like real Nashville, but I'm trying. I'm trying to belong here. I want people to, when they look at me, they think, yeah, that guy belongs in Nashville, right? And yet when I read the scriptures and I read the stories of the earliest followers of Jesus, they didn't belong where they were. Their lives did not make sense in their context. I mean, the powers at the time were the ones killing them. They didn't belong. And Jesus is saying, I'm going to prepare a place for you, which means that your place ultimately is not here. The place that we're trying to belong so many times, the place that we're trying to fit in, the narrative that we're trying to fit our stories into isn't this one. It's that one. See, at the end of the day, their lives don't make sense if this is all that there is. If at the end of the day, death is the end, the apostles have gotten it way, way, way wrong. But if there's life after life, they've figured something out. If what we see with our eyes isn't all that there is, they're on to something. And if eternity is infinite, which is how we understand it and how people before us have understood it, why are we living for this short present moment, right? I mean, when I think about eternity, can y'all see this? Oops. This is a jar full of green coffee beans. If you've never seen unroasted coffee, it doesn't smell as good, by the way. But this is coffee before it's coffee. There are thousands of coffee beans in this jar. And it seems like so many times we're looking at a single one and investing our identity, investing our time and money and entire lives into this one little being. And there are thousands and millions, and as we sung in the last song, hundreds of billions. And yet, when I look at my life, I'm putting a whole lot of emphasis on this one fleeting moment. And my life makes sense for this one fleeting moment. But it doesn't make nearly as much sense for eternity. And so I'm trying to belong in Nashville, but I want to belong in heaven. Right now, if I showed up in heaven, it's like, you don't look like you belong here. Right? Do you ever think, like, I want to belong there? And there are times when I can belong both places. There are ways in which my life doesn't have to change, that there's some overlap in Nashville and heaven. It's called hot chicken. There is overlap in Nashville and heaven. But there are ways in which I am investing here that's stealing from me belonging in heaven. There are ways in which I'm living here that makes me not fit in there. And when I read the New Testament and trying to imagine myself in the New Testament, like, do you ever read a story or watch a movie and you try to figure out which character you are? And a lot of us just put ourselves in the hero and, like, I'm Spider-Man, Batman, or, you know, whatever your lead character is. And I think about, like, if I'm in the scripture, who am I? Where do I fit? It's probably not one of the close followers of Jesus. I'm the guy in the back trying to look over somebody's shoulder, like, I think that's the Son of God, but where do you belong this morning? When you evaluate your life, when you evaluate your heart and your mind, your ways of thinking and living, where do you fit? So I'm here this morning believing that there's something after this that's more important than this. And while the way we live here affects eternity, our belief in eternity also affects the way we live here. And so this morning, what does it look like for heaven to come here? For us to begin to belong in heaven here on earth. To bring heaven here. If you look at the end of the book of Revelation, it's the last book in the Bible. It gives us this picture of no more crying and no more tears and the presence of God with God's people, God at home. That's actually part of where we got the name home church. It's God at home with us, us at home with God. How would the world look different if we made our home in heaven here? I don't know if homelessness would exist. I think there would be a line for foster children. I don't know that orphans would be a thing anymore. Hungry people would have food and more than enough. I think people who are alone would have friends and even family. Relationships would be restored. We would be looking less for what we can get out of someone and more about how we can give to them. Greed wouldn't be a thing. What I have is yours. What would it look like if heaven came to Nashville and we started trying to belong there and bring it here?